it.
Shot clock about to expire. Step back three from Embiid. Oh, my goodness.
Here's Joel on that last action. Shot clock winding down. Defenders running at him.
Well, that's Kate Scott and Al Abdanabi. Yesterday afternoon, as the Sixers roll over a bad Indiana team, and Joel Embiid had a great game yesterday. 41 points, 20 rebounds, 14 for 17 from the field, and a man who was there to cover it, as he usually is, Keith Pompey of the Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News joins us now. Keith, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. How you guys doing?
We're great. We are great. A little nervous about the Sixers. Let's start with the good stuff. The good stuff is Embiid, who, as you noted today, probably locked up the scoring title yesterday. The only way he cannot, I guess, is if he plays and gets 2 points and then Jokic plays and gets 50 points or whatever. But he's locked it up. But he has not locked up the MVP. Keith Pompey, we ask you, should he be the MVP and will he be the MVP?
Okay, so I'm going to tell you, I voted for him to be the MVP, the first time I've ever voted for him to be the MVP. So let's put that out there. And I don't think he will get the MVP. The reason being is I feel like that right about now, and there's a lot of people who are getting caught up in statistics. And it means a lot, I guess, you know, Joker, 2,000 points, 1,000 rebounds, you know, 500 assists. So I think that could stand in Joel Embiid's way, right, when it comes down to the national voting.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why I voted for him in regards to the MVP is, and I understand what people are saying about Joker, but if you take Embiid off of the 76ers team, no offense to the players they have, I believe that they're a play-in team. And even though we talked about when you led in, you said, you know, they played a bad Indiana team. He scored 41 points and had 20 rebounds against a bad Indiana team. But it seems like he's had to have performances like that all year, regardless of the quality of the competition, for them to win, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at it, when we talk about most valuable, he has been the most valuable player on the team for the 76ers, arguably the league. I also think that we have to go into account his whole season, the totality. Like in the beginning, the whole Ben Simmons saga, right? It was to a point where he was carrying them then.
Yep.
And then now you look at it, they have James Harden. James Harden hasn't come close to performing the way that everybody expected him to do, and he's still carrying the Sixers. So that's the reason why I voted for Embiid. But there are going to be some people who have a vote, and they just don't pay as close attention to what the Sixers are doing and what they've been through as, you know, others, and they're going to go for the, you know, for the Joker's stat.
Yeah,
Ray, I would just like to record that and send that to every voter, if I may.
No, I agree. I agree with Keith entirely, and I think that, Keith, I didn't realize until I was reading a piece this week that said that for Jokic, 2,000 points, 1,000 rebounds, 500 assists in a season, which he did this year, was the first time it's ever been done by anybody. I didn't know that. So that's, that's pretty impressive. I agree with you there. If you look at the numbers, the fact that in terms of points, rebounds, and assists, he did something this year no player has ever done. That's pretty good. But I think it gets back to, and this is the point that you just made, it gets back to the whole notion of what is most valuable player. You know, what does that award mm-hmm. really tell you? And when you think about what the Sixers were this year, what they went through, as you say, with the Simmons thing, the whole transformation at midseason when they make the trade, they make the team over, they bring in a new player in Harden, they have to reconstitute how they're going to play the game and everything. The one constant through the whole thing has been Embiid. I mean, he's been there every night, and he's kept this team on track. And I agree with you. I mean, if you take him off this team, they're nowhere, you know? So if you're just going to define it by what an MVP truly means, I think he is the most valuable. I'm not taking anything away from what Jokic has accomplished because it's been great. But if you really define most valuable player to who has been most valuable and critical to his team and what would the team be without him, I honestly think it's Embiid hands down.
Yeah, I agree. Of course, I agree.
Yeah. So they play tonight. They're, I guess, 3:30 start today, right, against the Pistons. Sixers would be a favorite. Celtics play the Grizzlies. If the Celtics win, the Celtics get the 3 seed no matter what. Any sense? The Grizzlies are playing for nothing today, right, Keith? Any sense that the Grizzlies are going to play guys, or are they just going to kind of tank this one?
Yeah, it's funny because I keep, like, going online looking to see, right? I mean, it's like, let's say, any updates. You know, the weird thing is the Grizzlies wanted to basically have all their guys together going into the playoffs. Now, they do have 6 days off before they play the next one. My only question is, you know, Ja Morant just came back from missing 9 games with an injury. Do you want to do a back-to-back with him? And what about some of these other guys? So, you know, my thing is, if the coach, it depends on what they want. Like, if they want to basically say, okay, we're going to play another game, you know, let's do it. But, you know, something tells me that, and I could be wrong, but, you know, I get the gist by reading stuff, that it could be one of those things where they get up today and they're looking at guys and making phone calls and saying, how do you feel? How do you feel, Ja? And if Ja says he just wants to rest, then they're not going to play. Now, I'm under the belief that the Boston Celtics, because, you know, we have Matisse Thybulle, who's not fully vaccinated in Philadelphia, but the Boston Celtics has Al Horford, and they have a Jaylen Brown. So, you know, they have 2 guys who they don't want to go to Toronto and play with. So I'm under the belief that, you know, the Celtics are going to come, bring it. They're going to have all their starters, and they're going to try to go hard as if it is a playoff game today against the Grizzlies.
How do you feel when you're looking ahead to what lies ahead, the possible matchups for the Sixers in the playoffs? Which ones do you view as favorable, and which ones do you view as the most perilous?
You know, it's weird, and it's funny because when we look at it, we would say possible matchups. Let's start with the first one. You look at Chicago, and you see how the Sixers match up against them. Chicago just doesn't have anyone who can stop Embiid.
No, yeah.
But when you look at Toronto in the regular season, I mean, Toronto hasn't really even played the Sixers with their full complement of players, and they've been able to get the best of them. And then the one game that the Sixers beat them with, Toronto had 6 guys out with COVID, right? So it's one of those things where you look at how long and how athletic they are. They have a lot of interchangeable parts. You know, that's a tough matchup. And it's one matchup that a lot of people are saying, you don't want to play the Raptors, you don't want to play the Brooklyn Nets, and you don't want to meet the Boston Celtics in the playoffs. They're 3 Atlantic Division, you know, rivals, right? But the one thing I will say is, you remember last year when they lost to the Atlanta Hawks?
Sure.
Everyone was excited that they were playing the Atlanta Hawks.
Yeah, that's
you,
true.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it was a matchup we wanted.
That's the matchup you want, because they destroyed the Atlanta Hawks in the regular season. And then what happens is, you know, playoff basketball is a little bit different. You can get there, scout your opponent more. So it's one of those things where, although you say to yourself, like, I want the Bulls, I want the Bulls, I want the Bulls, you know, it's basically going to come down to how are the coaches going to scheme and how are they going to have people prepared. And, you know, it's going to be more of a half-court game, which you think is suits James Harden a little bit better. You know, you have a guy like Danny Green, who he's playing Toronto. You know, he wanted to go back to Toronto. He ended up, you know, signing with the Lakers for that 1 year. So he's going to be a little bit motivated. So, you know, it's one of those things where the playoffs, things can change. But right now, when you look at it, you say to yourself, nah, we don't want any parts of that because of the Matisse situation. But again, it's all about how is Doc Rivers going to have them prepared, and what is James Harden going to do? Is he going to step up and show that he's that guy that they traded for?
Yeah, I want to get to Harden in a minute, but I just want to stick with the Toronto possibility for a moment. And Ray and I talked about this early, and maybe it's unfair to think this way or to ask you this, but if they play Toronto, and if perchance they lose the series because he can't play, right? They split the first 2 games here, they go to Toronto, there's defensive lapses, whatever. For Joel Embiid, this is his best. I mean, maybe things will get better, but this is clearly, you know, he's having his best season. For James Harden, we believe he came here in part because he really saw the opportunity to win and was leaving a team where a guy wasn't vaccinated. If they lose it and Thibault becomes an issue, is it possible like he can't play here in the future, or am I making too much out of this?
I mean, that's a great question. I mean, I don't know if you're making too much out of it. You know, I think it is a sensitive subject. You know, where you know people, you're gonna if they get rid of him, there are going to be some people that say, "Look, man, he has his right," and then it becomes a bigger issue. But I will say this, and you kind of feel sorry for the guy in a way, because it's like a no-win situation for him. You know, he it's not like he's a superstar player to whereas, like, you know, Kyrie, you just deal with what Kyrie does because he's a max player. You may not like him, right, but when you have a guy like Matisse Thybulle, you know, he's going to be the scapegoat mm-hmm. if they lose. Mm-hmm. And if he stays or not, there's going to be certain people saying, you know, they're not going to come down on him like they did Ben Simmons, but there are going to be certain people saying, it's your fault. Even though when he played, the Sixers were getting destroyed by that team, people are still going to say, it's your fault. You're the reason why we lost. And you know, he does have, you know, I'm a guy who's fully vaxxed, a guy who got my boosters. Matter of fact, I'm 50. So I got my the second booster yesterday before mm-hmm. the game.
Yep.
So I believe in that. But at the same time, he has a right to do what he wants to do. But at the same time, there's always an scapegoat when things go wrong. And I feel like that he will be made the scapegoat if they do lose that series.
Yeah, I think it's unavoidable, Keith. No question about that. Glenn alluded to Harden, so I guess we got to kind of talk about him, where he is right now. Clearly, he's been struggling. I mean, it's the long range shooting has just been part of it. He's just, you know, he can't quite get to the basket anymore. I guess my question is it a case of that he's still playing hurt, that the hamstring hasn't fully recovered, and he's just trying to play through an injury? Or is it a case of he's just getting older and there are things that we used to remember him being able to do that he just can't do anymore? Or is it more like, is it probably just maybe a combination of the two?
I think it's the third. It's a combination of the two. I mean, you know, and I was listening to you guys yesterday, and I, you know, heard you say, you know, Derek Bodner said the same thing. I do think it's a combination of the two. Now, the one thing is, I will say that, you know, it's obvious that something is wrong with him. I mean, there was a time where he had a sleeve on his calf, right? There was a time where I saw on the bench the guy was giving him a massage on his calf. You look at it now; he's been playing some games with a sleeve on his whole leg. You know, so that tells you that something is wrong. You can look at his shot. You can look that there's not a lot of elevation. You can look at sometimes he's back rimming these threes, right? So you could tell that he's like pushing extra. The thing is it's like, although he keeps saying everything is great, you know that the hamstring is bothering him still a little bit, right? But I think he's trying to power through it. When you see a guy who last year he had so many hamstring problems, he had some early on, and then he comes back and he's playing well initially, to me, I look at it as if he had some rest. You know, he was able to come back and play well. But then on the NBA schedule, it's so grueling. When you start playing X amount of games, it kind of like takes away from it because you don't have that long of a recovery. So I think that has a lot to do with the hamstring. Now, again, he is getting older. There was times in the past where, you know, as a young guy, you didn't need to take that much rest. You could do whatever you did and come out and play. So, you know, I think hopefully for him and hopefully for the 76ers, the fact that, you know, games are going to be spread out a little bit more in the playoffs, that, you know, he can, be a little bit better. Now, something else I will add, the rule changes also impacted his play as well. Now, I know the shot isn't there, yeah, but there was a time in the past when his shot wasn't going well, he would just draw just drive the lane, and because of his status, if someone would touch him, he would get a foul. Nowadays, it looks like he's trying to get that, and they're not giving it to him.
Kick out that leg. You know? The ref's not buying it.
Not anymore.
No. Well, Keith Pompey, it is a pleasure to speak with you. You can follow him on Twitter at Pompey on Sixers, and we look forward to talking to you maybe during an extended playoff run.
Yeah, maybe.
Keith, be well. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Keith.
Thanks for having me.
All right, there you go. James Harden yesterday had a better game. Well, had a better second half. First half, 2 of 8, 0 for 4 on three-pointers. Second half, 5 of 8, 2 of 5 on three-pointers. Final, 7 for 16, 2 for 9.
Yeah, 14 assists, but also 5 turnovers.
Yep.
So he just has to play better.
Yep.
You know, for them to even get to the conference final, not even talking about winning the whole thing, for him to get the conference final, he's just going to have to play a lot better than he's playing right now.
You bet. Yes, sir. Let's get Rick in West Philly. You're on with Ray and Glenn. Hey, Rick.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How y'all doing?
All right.
We're good.
All right. Good, Mac. Always good to hear from you.
Thank you, sir.
And Ray, you are my man for the last 45 years.
Well, I appreciate
that. You
made
me a football genius because I would sit up here and listen to your articles, read the Daily News, or watch or listen to whatever you got to say, and I don't make no decisions until I'm talking to you about football.
So,
and then I go outside and argue with the guys, and it's a nice debate, but they be arguing with me, and little do they know, they're debating you.
Well,
I appreciate me making you look like a genius.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. So where do you want to see the Eagles go in the draft?
Man, they better get somebody on defense. They need to get if they got to move up and get that guy from that defensive tackle from Georgia, the one that runs that speed 51. Please get him. I don't care what you do, or you got to get a cornerback, or you got to get a linebacker. And I know linebackers to the Eagles is like the plague, but you know.
What was it, 1979, Jerry Robinson?
79, Jerry Robinson.
The last linebacker they took in the first
made
round.
No sense.
Yeah.
And they sit up here and they watch all the teams win the Super Bowls. Look at their linebackers. What is wrong with y'all?
Yeah, it's philosophical. But, I mean, you look at the teams that have won the last couple championships, linebackers have been key. And linebackers you get the right guy, it's a difference maker.
Exactly, right? So, I don't understand. And Jesus, man, why did you apply for the general manager job at the Eagles?
Rick, thanks, buddy. We've asked ourselves that question forever.
Comes up every night at Tommy and
every
me.
Year, all these years, wasted time in the media when you could be building a dynasty. One of these days we'll sit down, we'll have that
you
long,
get,
long
you time. Know, sometimes you get them right, sometimes you get them wrong.
We all have.
Yeah, oh, for sure. But if there's one thing I've learned in 50-plus years of covering the NFL and analyzing drafts, nobody's perfect. I mean, even the best general managers make wrong decisions. I mean, Bobby Bethard, one of the great football architects of all time, is in the Hall of Fame, and he drafted Ryan Leaf. So, I mean, everybody can be wrong.
I went back. We may do this in one of these coming weeks. For some reason, somebody posted online the first round of the 2012 draft, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Fletcher Cox draft. Right?
Yeah.
And I was looking at that first round. Fletcher Cox is like the only guy still, not literally, but one of a handful of guys still playing.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe the best pick of the round, ultimately, now Luke Kuechly was picked before Fletcher Cox, and he was a great player.
He was a real good player.
Whose career had to end early.
Right.
And Fletcher's really no longer a terrific player that he once was. But just going through it, leaving Kuechly and Cox out, you go through it, and like the third pick of the draft is some offensive tackle who played 3 years and disappeared, and the fifth pick is this wide receiver everybody thought was going to be good, and he caught 80 passes, and it happens. We localize it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we say, like, God almighty, they took Jalen Reagor, and they could have taken Justin Jefferson. What in the world were they thinking?
Right.
But every year, you look back, and half of the first-round picks are duds.
Yeah. Well, and the offensive lineman you're talking about, I think, was Matt Khalil, right? He was the offensive
tackle. Might have been. I don't know.
Yeah, he was like the third overall pick. Everybody said, can't miss. You know,
it might have been.
You know, a good all-pro player, probably a Pro Bowl player, Matt Khalil. Never amounted to anything. It turns out his younger brother, Ryan, winds up getting drafted by Carolina. Nobody really thinks all that much of him, and he goes on to Carolina and becomes an outstanding player for a decade.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everybody, it's so hard. It really is so hard to make these evaluations.
Yep. All right, we'll come back. We will get your calls. We want to look at the most overrated stat. We got a $50 gift card to Scheib Sports to give out. Moshe, nobody's running away with this thing at this point, right?
No, so far, Ray is still winning.
Completion
percentage, yeah.
Yes, that's a good one. That was a very good one. 215-592-9494. All calls, the next segment. All calls. The segment after that, Ray's going to give his NFL draft preview. Where are we going with that one today, Ray?
Well, we talked about it yesterday. I'll start on my sleepers.
Nice.
I'll give you two defensive sleepers today.
Love it. All right. He's Ray Dinger. I'm Glenn Mack. Now, Ray and Glenn, 94 WIP. Let's talk to V in Sharon Hill. How you doing, V?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
All righty.
I just had a question about passer rating versus quarterback passer rating.
Yeah.
To me, it seems like the QBR is over. It's not taking into account just regular passes. You got to have like really long passes, and it just seems like it's too much.
It puts a different emphasis on it, but I would argue that both of those formulas, I mean, they are stats, but they're stats based on formulas as opposed to an actual event that happens on the field. Let me see if I can explain this. Like completion percentage, flawed as it is a specific the percentage of passes you complete. Quarterback rating and QBR, the two of them, now I'm getting confused, are both based on taking a bunch of events, putting them together in an equation, weighing and measuring them in different ways, and coming up with a number. I will agree with V's whole premise that it's overrated, because when you look at the all-time quarterback ratings, Ray,
yes,
there are a lot of mediocre quarterbacks of today at the top of the list.
Right.
Exactly.
And the great quarterbacks of the past don't show up.
Right.
So I think V's got a good one.
No, I agree with V. I mean, if you look at, and it's easy for people to access, just go online, go to the Pro Football Hall of Fame statistical page and look at the all-time quarterbacks in the categories you're talking about, quarterback efficiency rating or passer rating, you'll see guys like Dave Craig, you know, who everybody remembers, played a million years, played for a dozen different teams, I'm just pulling his name out of the air because I've sort of done this myself. And you look at his passer, he has a higher passer rating than Johnny Unitas, who's one of the five greatest quarterbacks that's ever played. So, I mean, the numbers are skewed that way. But what it tells you is, and what it absolutely tells you is that the way the game has changed over the years is not reflected in the statistics. In other words, today the short pass, the West Coast offense, the dink and dunk stuff has greatly inflated those kinds of numbers, whereas in the past, in the 50s and the 60s, the Unitases, the Tittles, those kinds of quarterbacks, when they threw the ball, they weren't dumping it off. When they threw the ball, they were throwing it downfield.
Yeah.
So typically, you know, at the end of a season, even a really good quarterback, touchdown passes and interceptions were very close because guys were taking more chances with the football. Now the game's all about
it's a good one,
not turning the ball over. But, V, I think, yeah, V, that's a good one.
Do you know who's number 7 in the all-time quarterback rating? Kirk Cousins.
There you go.
7th all-time. They're all contemporary guys. Mahomes is number 1. I mean, you know, these young guy. Mahomes only played 63 games. So I'm going to just give you guys who played it.
Steve Young, when he retired.
Or more games.
When Steve Young retired, I think Steve Young was number 1.
Well, he's now number 10.
Okay.
So this is guys who've played 100 or more games, right? I'm taking out the young guys. Number 1 is Aaron Rodgers. That's fine. Aaron Rodgers is one of the 5 greatest quarterbacks of all time.
Yeah,
so I don't have
great.
A problem with that.
I have no problem with that.
Number 2 is Russell Wilson. Number 3 is Drew Brees. 4 is Kirk Cousins. Again, guys with 100 games or more. 5 is Brady. 6 is Tony Romo. Come on. What are you, crazy? So, I have no argument with the Rodgers and the Breezes and the Bradys, clearly.
They're all-timers.
Yeah. But I would tell you that having Kirk Cousins and Tony Romo at the top of the list, something's wrong here.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Right? Something's really wrong here. So anyway, that's, I think the overrated stat, and V's maybe in the lead. But yeah. Ray, you and I don't get to make that decision.
No.
Let's get Eric in Maryland. You're on with Ray and Glenn. Hi, Eric.
Hey, good morning, fellas. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
What I wanted to ask both of you about is the terminology that's used in scouting and how it reflects in drafting. For example, the term raw, is there a difference between the term raw when using it for a prospect versus a project? You know, like, for example, Mailata was a raw project,
ooh, yeah,
but he looks to be a star, whereas someone like, you know, Kevon Wallace, who we drafted, I think, 2 years ago, he was raw, but he had so much more experience playing.
I hear what you're saying.
But he's not on the field.
I understand. Let me see if I can interpret, right? He's talking about guys who are raw because they are so inexperienced,
right,
that raw is like, you know, uncooked, untested, just what do you have here? You see physical ability, but how is that going to translate?
Correct.
To a guy like Kevon Wallace, who we know he's never going to be a star, but maybe there's something in there.
Right.
You know, that's that potential thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see what you're. I think you're right, and there you're kind of, it's two different ways of saying the same thing. Mailata is, he's the definition of raw. If you're talking about a raw prospect, that's the definition of that is Jordan Mailata, because I mean you don't get any rawer than a guy that had never played, and so what the Eagles did with him is probably a one in a million. You know, I mean, you got this guy who had never actually even played the game. You drafted him in the seventh round. You worked with him for a couple of years, and you not only got him on the field, but he's now on the verge of being a Pro Bowl player. Doesn't happen very often. Kevon Wallace, to me, is a disappointment. I saw him play at Clemson. I saw him play at Clemson, and he was a good player. I mean, the Eagles drafted him in the fourth round. I actually thought he could go higher. His college career was very good. His college tape was very good. A lot of it depends on how you want to use him. You know, he's a safety who's really kind of a big hitter, has certain liabilities in coverage, but I thought with good coaching would develop into a good player. I'm kind of surprised that this far along in it that he hasn't made more of an impact. You know, this year, okay, you know, the Eagles right now, they're thin at the safety position. So if he can stay healthy, I mean, he will get a good long look at training camp this year because, frankly, they're looking for a player. Maybe it'll finally happen for him. But, you know, here's an example of what I'm talking about. You know, you can really study this and think you know what you're doing and make a judgment mistake. And I thought Kevon Wallace, when the Eagles made that pick, I said, oh, that's a really good pick. He's going to come on the field and play for this team. Here we are. We're this far down the road, and it hadn't happened yet.
So to V's point of quarterback rating being an overrated stat, I'm now so locked into this thing. In the top 35 players, all-time quarterbacks all-time,
mm-hmm,
there are only two whose career ended before the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Young at 10 and Joe Montana at 18.
Right.
On the list, ahead of any others who would have played, you know, before that, it includes Marcus Mariota, Matt Schaub, Tyrod Taylor, Dante Culpepper, Jameis Winston. I mean, like, these guys are all in the top 30 all time.
Right.
You want to tell me how Tyrod Taylor can't keep a job?
No. He's moving from team to team.
And yet, here he is, better than your Johnny Unitas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a flawed stat.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I mean, you look at Unitas' number, it almost makes you laugh. And Namath's is worse.
Yeah, well, Namath threw a lot of balls up in the air. But yeah. But I mean, I'm trying to think of quarterbacks who played in the 90s, in the 80s and the 90s, who were great quarterbacks. Dan Fouts, right? Dan Fouts is one of the best quarterbacks I ever saw.
Right.
He's not on this. He's behind Carson Palmer and Baker Mayfield. What are you, crazy?
Well, where would Aikman be?
He's not in the top 35.
Yeah.
I mean, I can keep scrolling. Hold on. Let me see. I'm just looking for guys whose career ended before 2000. All right. Dan Marino is number 40, 14 spaces behind Matt Schaub. How's that?
I'm not surprised. I mean, I've looked at this list, and you just roll your eyes when you do. I mean, when you look at
this,
they
got to come up with another.
When you look at this, what it tells you is you say, no, we got to figure out a different system than this.
Yeah,
this one is not working.
Oh, Jim Kelly is number 50. That's it. That's the top 50.
Yeah,
that's it. Marino and Kelly sneak in after
barely make the cut.
Young and Montana. So that's four quarterbacks in the top 50 who played before this. Nick Foles is in there ahead of Dan Marino.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that way on February 6th.
Well, I mean, you've got Young and Montana are obviously great quarterbacks, but they played in that what you would call quarterback-friendly system, the West Coast offense, Walsh offense, which lends itself into throwing safe passes and completing a high percentage and not turning the ball over. You know, it's no accident that – look, they're great quarterbacks, and they probably would have functioned well in any offense, but – it's the West Coast offense that this rating system is kind of built around.
David Garrard, who I don't even remember.
Oh, Jacksonville.
I know. I'm being facetious.
Oh, okay.
Is ahead of Dan Fouts. V might win this thing.
I don't want to lobby.
Let's see what Rudy.
No, I think she's the leader in the club.
Rudy and Horsham may have something better. Rudy, you got an overrated stat? Hello, Rudy? Rudy is not there. Let's go to Irv in Haverford. Hello, Irv.
Hey, guys. Love listening to you. I'm retired now, so I get a chance to listen to sports radio a little bit more. This is directed at Ray in terms of when you draft a first-round pick from one of the top schools like Alabama, Georgia, where they have winning programs, championship programs, are you more likely to get a well-coached player who has played high competition throughout their careers? Are you more likely to hit on those choices? Has anybody looked at that data to see first-round choices, Alabama, Clemson, et cetera, et cetera?
You would think that that would be true. It's not true across the board. There is a school of thought that the players who play, we'll use Alabama for an example, because Saban's program has been so good for so long, that Nick coaches his players very well. They're very well schooled. They know how to play. But he works them so hard that guys come out of there and in some cases are maybe a little overrated. Maybe they have peaked out, that there's no more, you know, they have kind of tapped as good as they're going to be. There's no really more room for growth when you come to the NFL. That happens with some guys. The other part is that Nick works his guys so hard that some of them are burnt out. I mean, emotionally, physically, they kind of come out of Alabama. Not all of them, but obviously some Alabama guys come to the NFL and do great. But there is a certain burnout factor coming out of his program that guys come to the NFL and they just don't have a whole lot left. And then you get a guy like, and here's one, a guy that I totally whiffed on. Was a cornerback named D. Milner. Wasn't that many years ago. I mean, he was everybody had him as a first-round pick. I had him as a top-10 pick. Came to the NFL, complete bust. And some of it was injury. He got hurt. It was a little bit of misfortune. Didn't wound up in the right system. But another part of it, when I talked to some coaches, I said, whatever happened with D. Milner? I mean, how could a guy like that miss? They say he was burnout. Just burnout on the game. And so that's one of the things you have to – but one of the things I do kind of believe in, and I really do believe in this, I think guys who come from winning programs, that helps. Whether it was a big college or a small college or D2, it helps if a guy was at a winning program because he comes to the NFL and he already knows the idea of what it takes to win. That's a valuable thing to have.
That's very interesting. I very much appreciate your opinion. I wanted to also give you an overrated stat.
Yeah.
And that's kicking average for punters. It really depends on where they're kicking from on the field. If they're kicking closer to the other team's end zone, that's going to shorten the punt. It should really be net return yards on punting that gives you a better handle.
That's a good point.
If you're kicking directionally.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. If you're kicking from the 50, you're punting from the 50. And by the way, my advice is usually go for it. But if you're punting from the 50, well, you don't want a 50-yard punt. You want a 42-yard punt and get it out of bounds. Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
That's okay.
You're still pushing for that punter for the Eagles to draft, huh?
Oh, yeah.
San Diego State.
Yeah, you know what? I was going to look at a mock draft this morning before I came in.
Matt Araza.
Yeah. What do you think, Ray? Eagles got a lot of picks.
I think
got
it's
a lot of picks.
I think it's not a bad idea. I mean, they have three picks.
I've won the heart of Ray Dinger on this.
No. I never disagreed with that.
Oh.
I mean, Glenn, he's a real weapon.
Yeah.
He's a real weapon. I mean, not only does he have a big leg where he can punt it 70, 80 yards, which he can, by the way, but he's also got very nice touch. He's also good at killing the ball inside the 20. He's about the best college punter I've seen. I don't know if I go back as far as Ray Guy, but I can't think of one that was better than him.
Ray Guy was a first rounder, but that will never happen.
No, that I don't know that that'll happen again. But if the Eagles right now have 3 5th round picks, right? I would certainly have no problem using one of those picks on him. The only problem is I don't know if he's going to be there in the 5th round. Yeah. He might go in round 4.
That's interesting.
Yeah, his stock right now among the NFL people is very high.
Yeah. I'm looking. Wisnowski, the punter, was drafted in the 4th round in 2019. There are a bunch that are drafted in the 5th. Not one in a third. Anger, who was it? Matt Anger? Was that his name?
Mm-hmm.
2012 was drafted in the 3rd round. Generally not before the 5th. Yeah, he's going to go. You know what? He's going to go. Eagles are going to have to take him in round 4. And I would not be upset.
No, it would be nice if you could. Since you have 3 in the 5th round, it would be nice if you could get there, but I don't think you will. I think he's too good.
Yeah, you got enough. You can do it. Do it. Howie, do it. 215-592-9494. All right, coming up, Ray Dinger is going to give you his NFL draft preview, cover a couple of sleepers. We'll get some calls in. We'll give away the prize. We'll take you right up to leading off. If you have a Philly-specific question, you call in now. I will get you into that first segment of leading off. Looking forward to talking some Phil's baseball. All right, everybody. We are doing this every day leading up to the NFL draft. It is time for the Ray Dinger NFL Draft Preview. Oh, yeah.
Oh, you love this NFL Films music, don't you?
I love when you talk with it. It makes me feel like, you know, football.
It makes you feel like football. It does for me, too. I know you're always like my sleepers, so I'll get started on them today. I'll give you two. Every year I pick 5. So today I will give you 2 defensive players. Since we've been talking a lot of defense with the Eagles, I'll give you 2 defensive players. One of them is a guy I'm sure you remember his father. Do you remember Carnell Lake?
Yeah.
He was a safety, was a very good player.
Pittsburgh?
Pro Bowl player with the Steelers.
Yeah.
His son is Quentin Lake.
Okay.
Who is also a safety.
I like bloodlines.
At UCLA. Played for Chip Kelly. And I really like him. He's very talented, very smart. He looked like a kid whose father played football. He looks like he's been well coached, certainly knows his way around the field, knows how to play the game, doesn't do anything stupid. Plays the same position as his father, not quite as big as his father. He's 6'1", 205, which is, people will say, well, that's too small to really be a safety. I don't agree with that. But for that very reason is one of the reasons why he's going to probably slip in the draft farther than he should. Based on his talent and based on his tape, he should probably be no worse than a 3rd-round pick. He'll probably wind up being in round 4 or 5. But is a worthy player. He's a really good tackler, very physical. He's not afraid to come up and force the run. But he has good enough instincts to play deep and play the pass. He led the Bruins in passes broken up and in interceptions last year. And is a very, very good open field tackler. He's a guy that I don't know that you're going to project him as a rookie starter, but he can certainly work in if you have a whole lot of sub packages. If you play a lot of nickel and dime, you can certainly find ways to get him on the field. And from day one, he'll be a good special teams player and with the potential to develop into more than that. So Quentin Lake from UCLA, 6'1", 205 safety, is my sleeper number one. The other one, interestingly enough, is a player that we had a caller ask me about like 3 weeks ago. Said, Ray, what are your opinion on Malcolm Rodriguez? And I didn't want to get into it then because I was just really starting to put my sleepers together. And Rodriguez was one of the guys I wanted to go with because I saw him play. He played at Oklahoma State. And he's one of these guys who's all over the field. I mean, he's always around the football. He's undersized, which is another reason why he'll fall in the draft. But he's so smart. He's so heady. And, again, such a good tackler. One of the things, Glenn, and you and I talk about this all the time, The NFL, for all the things that it does well,
yeah,
one of the things that has really suffered in the league is tackling.
Yes.
It is really not a great tackling league anymore. I mean, how many missed tackles do you see in games?
In the Eagles secondary, a lot.
A lot. And I don't know it's just because I'm watching the Eagles. I watch other games, and I see the same thing. So that's one of the reasons why when I'm putting this together and I'm scouting defensive guys, tackling, it's as stupid as this sounds, tackling is important to me, okay? I hate to sound old-fashioned, but I want guys that'll tackle.
Yeah.
Quentin Lake can do that, and Malcolm Rodriguez can absolutely do that. He's 5'11", which is one of the reasons why he's probably going to fall in the draft. He's only 230 pounds. People say he's too small, but he's one of those guys that's always around the ball, always making plays, and never misses a tackle. You know who he reminds me of?
Mm.
Do you remember Britt Hager?
Oh, yeah.
Britt Hager.
Yeah,
who played,
useful guy.
Yeah, that's exactly what Rodriguez reminds me of. He plays in the same conference. Hager played at Texas.
Good special teams guy.
Same kind of player. Plays some middle linebacker. Started for a little while.
Buddy guy.
But a useful guy that could play some defense, but was a really good special teamer. I see Malcolm Rodriguez as that. He's a guy that's probably going to be a fifth-round draft pick, but I guarantee you people will get him in the coaches, will get him in the building, and are going to love him. And he's going to wind up. He'll be a core special teams player right from the beginning.
They need
and,
that, man.
And a guy that, depending on how your if your defensive coordinator uses a lot of sub packages and uses linebackers in certain situations, he could be on the field a lot, even as a rookie player. So those are my two defensive sleepers for today. Malcolm Rodriguez, linebacker from Oklahoma State, and Quentin Lake, a safety from UCLA.
Sweet. Nice start to it, Ray. And by the way, over the years, your sleepers, I remember Jason Peters. Was one way back.
Jason Peters was one of my sleepers. You know, the very first crop.
Darren Sproles was one of them.
Darren Sproles was one of my sleepers. Jordy Nelson was one of my sleepers. Oh. One of my sleepers is in the Hall of Fame right now, and that's Jason Taylor.
Wow.
When he came out of college, he came out of Akron.
Yeah, you've had a very good record with this, so it's always worth listening to. All right, let's get in some more calls here. Rudy, in Horsham wants to talk about the theater a little bit.
Good afternoon. Second time caller. 41-year listener to back way in the days.
Well, thanks, Rudy.
And the reason for my call, a couple things. First of all, I wanted to compliment Ray Dinger. By coincidence, I was listening Thursday, and I'm glad he brought Tommy and me up to the Bucks County Playhouse. And I have recommended it to everybody because it was a phenomenal night. And Ray, I'm from Pittsburgh originally, and don't hang up on me because my first time calling, I got hung up on
that's
in
fine.
2017 because my boys are born and raised in Philadelphia, and I wanted the Eagles to at least experience once what we experienced six times. And I go back here from Harold Carmichael, the days when I was a kid and used to go down to Pitt Stadium to watch them play, and they were brutal. Big Daddy Lipscomb, people like that. And when I came to Philadelphia, my boys and I are very big into sports. And, Ray, I my all-time hero is Roberto Clemente, but you have now become an idol of mine because your knowledge, the way you present yourself as far as everything that happens in Philadelphia, you happen. And I said this to you that night. You put a positive pitch on everything, no matter whether it be a negative highlight or that. And the thing that really touched me is when we won the Super Bowl, you had your son there with you. And I saw the tears and the emotion.
Yeah.
And
well,
that
Rudy, I got to run, and I appreciate the call. That came up last night a little bit, though, didn't it?
Comes up pretty much every night. Yeah. Every night at Tommy and me, there's somebody in the post-show Q&A that will say, you know, that moment after the Super Bowl with you and your son, it brought tears to my eyes, too. And I think it's just an emotion we all shared, Glenn. I mean, what was happening with me and David was happening all over the Delaware Valley. It was just... It took people back, you know, and everybody had that moment.
It was everybody.
Yeah, you know, this was for Grandpa. This is for Dad. This is for Uncle Bill. I mean, the Eagles won for everybody, and we all shared in that. And the fact here we are all these years later still talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. Maybe we'll get that one again. That'd be nice.
That would be nice.
Let me see. Who am I going to sneak in here? A couple of people got stats. Real quick. I'm going to get Mike real quick. Mike, what are you thinking?
Ray, I'm the caller who's ruining your W-2 by pacing around your book.
I was at Tommy and Me on Friday for the second time, and the guy who plays Tommy should win a Tony.
He is. Tom Teddy is a tremendous actor. He's been doing the play from day one. I can't imagine doing it without him.
Tremendous. Okay, sports. I am so tired of hearing these athletes talk about MVP. Can I hear somebody say, can we get to the second or third round?
Oh, I don't think Embiid has minimized winning in the playoffs.
No.
I will not question Embiid's desire to win.
Right.
I do think he's campaigning a little more for MVP than I would like to see, but whatever. You know, we think he deserves it, so whatever. But, yes, I think the big thing is I would like to see them get to the Eastern Conference Finals and maybe the finals. We've waited forever.
I agree.
All right, last caller of this hour, and we're sticking around here. I am going to be doing leading off John and Maniunk. What do you got, John?
Quick stat for you, the plus minus in basketball. I don't think that accounts for the other guys on the court with you.
I agree. I think it is a flawed stat. Plus minus in hockey can be overrated, but when I look at it and Keith Yandel is a minus 42, I go like, yeah.
That's okay. Probably accurate.
Yeah, the year that Mark Howe was a plus 86, it's like, yeah, I get
right,
that.
I buy that.
But, yeah, it's same kind of thing as in basketball. It's like you're on a bad team with a bunch of jokers around you. What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that's a good one. It's a good one. And you had something on the Eagles?
Yeah, I was going to talk. We're talking about riding the cloud. You think there's another needing it safely? Any chance to get Honey Badger?
Honey Badger.
We talked about that yesterday. Glenn's very high on that. He's being mentioned. He went down and visited with the Saints, and he went to LSU. So there's that. There's a connection there. But he's been in touch with the Eagles, and he would be a nice pickup. He's a leader. He's a ball hawk, and he's a guy that could. Really, really bring some oomph to that secondary.
Absolutely. And by the way, I read the story. He visited with New Orleans because he was down visiting his family
right.
in Louisiana, and the Saints said, hey, come on by. So it's not exactly like, you know, the Saints, I don't know, it just seemed a little less formal than that. So,
no, it definitely sounds like the Eagles are interested.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to come down to the money. But he's absolutely a player worth investigating.
Absolutely. All right, Moshe Kravitz. There's a whole lot of stats we didn't get to today, but we got to some good ones. Who wins the prize for the most overrated stat in sports?
Oh, we had an early caller, Ray in Rittenhouse. No, I'm just kidding. there was only one stat that you guys really, caught on to and wanted to talk about when it was brought up as an overrated stat that is not representative of performance. And V and Sharon Hill called to say the quarterback rating, QBR.
Yeah.
So V and Sharon Hill wins the Scheib gift card.
It's a really good one. $50 gift card to Scheib Vintage Sports, where there's a story in every stitch. Check out their throwback apparel at their Center City location or scheibsports.com.
I agree with Moshe. I think V's call was the best.
Yeah, she was good. All right, Ray, you are off to a Tommy and Me matinee. Have a great time. I will talk to you during the week.
Yep.
Stick around. We got Leading Off coming up right here next. And if you got a Philly, if you're on with a Phillies call, we'll take you. Coming up next on 94 WIP. All right, everybody. We are doing this every day leading up to the NFL draft. It is time for the Ray Dinger NFL Draft Preview. Oh, yeah.
Oh, you love this NFL Films music, don't you?
I love when you talk with it. It makes me feel like, football.
It makes you feel like football. It does for me, too. I know you're always like my sleepers, so I'll get started on them today. I'll give you two. Every year I pick five, so today I will give you two defensive players. Since we've been talking a lot of defense with the Eagles, I'll give you two defensive players. One of them is a guy I'm sure you remember his father. You remember Carnell Lake?
Yeah.
Was a safety, was a
yeah.
very good player.
Pittsburgh?
Pro Bowl player with the Steelers.
Yeah.
His son is Quentin Lake.
Okay.
Who is also a safety.
I like bloodlines.
At UCLA. Played for Chip Kelly, and I really like him. He's very talented, very smart. He looks like a kid whose father played football. He looks like he's been well coached. Certainly knows his way around the field. Knows how to play the game. Doesn't do anything stupid. Plays the same position as his father. Not quite as big as his father. He's 6'1", 205, which is people will say, well, that's too small to really be a safety. I don't agree with that. But for that very reason, is one of the reasons why he's going to probably slip in the draft farther than he should. Based on his talent and based on his tape, he should probably be no worse than a third-round pick. He'll probably wind up being in round four or five. But is a worthy player. He's a really good tackler, very physical. He's not afraid to come up and force the run. But he has good enough instincts to play deep and play the pass. He led the Bruins in passes broken up and in interceptions last year, and is a very, very good open field tackler. He's a guy that I don't know that you're going to project him as a rookie starter, but he can certainly work in if you have a whole lot of sub packages. If you play a lot of nickel and dime, you can certainly find ways to get him on the field. And from day one, he'll be a good special teams player and with the potential to develop into more than that. So Quinton Lake from UCLA, 6'1", 205 safety, is my sleeper number one. The other one, interestingly enough, is a player that we had a caller ask me about like 3 weeks ago. Said, Ray, what are your opinion on Malcolm Rodriguez? And I didn't want to get into it then because I was just really starting to put my sleepers together, and Rodriguez was one of the guys I wanted to go with. Because I saw him play, he played at Oklahoma State, and he's one of these guys who's all over the field. I mean, he's always around the football. He's undersized, which is another reason why he'll fall in the draft. But he's so smart, he's so heady, and again, such a good tackler. One of the things, Glenn, and you and I talk about this all the time, the NFL, for all the things that it does well, one of the things that has really suffered in the league is tackling.
Yes.
It is really not a great tackling league anymore. I mean, how many missed tackles do you see in games?
In the Eagles secondary, a lot.
A lot. And I don't know it's just because I'm watching the Eagles. I watch other games, and I see the same thing. So that's one of the reasons why when I'm putting this together and I'm scouting defensive guys, tackling, it's as stupid as this sounds, tackling is important to me, okay? I hate to sound old-fashioned, but I want guys that'll tackle.
Yeah.
Quinton Lake can do that, and Malcolm Rodriguez can absolutely do that. He's 5'11", which is one of the reasons why he's probably going to fall in the draft. He's only 230 pounds. People say he's too small, but he's one of those guys that's always around the ball, always making plays, and never misses a tackle. You know who he reminds me of?
Mm.
Do you remember Britt Hager?
Oh, yeah.
Britt Hager.
Yeah,
who played,
useful guy.
Yeah, that's exactly what Rodriguez reminds me of. He plays in the same conference. Hager played at Texas.
Good special teams guy.
Same kind of player. Plays some middle linebacker. Started for a little while.
Buddy guy.
But a useful guy that could play some defense, but was a really good special teamer. I see Malcolm Rodriguez as that. He's a guy that's probably going to be a fifth-round draft pick, but I guarantee you people will get him in the coaches, will get him in the building, and are going to love him. And he's going to wind up. He'll be a core special teams player right from the beginning.
They need that, man.
And a guy that, depending on how your defensive coordinator uses a lot of sub packages and uses linebackers in spurting situations, he could be on the field a lot, even as a rookie player. So those are my two defensive sleepers for today. Malcolm Rodriguez, linebacker from Oklahoma State, and Quinton Lake, a safety from UCLA.
Sweet. Nice start to it, Ray. And by the way, over the years, your sleepers, I remember Jason Peters. Was one way back.
Jason Peters was one of my sleepers. You know, the very first crop.
Darren Sproles was one of them.
Darren Sproles was one of my sleepers. Jordy Nelson was one of my sleepers. Oh. One of my sleepers is in the Hall of Fame right now, and that's Jason Taylor.
Wow.
When he came out of college. He came out of Akron.
Yeah, you've had a very good record with this, so it's always worth listening to. All right, let's get in some more calls here. Rudy, in Horsham wants to talk about the theater a little bit.
Good afternoon. Second time caller. 41-year listener to back way in the days.
Well, thanks, Rudy.
And the reason for my call, a couple things. First of all, I wanted to compliment Ray Dinger. By coincidence, I was listening Thursday, and I'm glad he brought Tommy and me up to the Bucks County Playhouse. And I have recommended it to everybody because it was a phenomenal night. And Ray, I'm from Pittsburgh originally, and don't hang up on me because my first time calling, I got hung up on
that's
in
fine.
2017 because my boys are born and raised in Philadelphia, and I wanted the Eagles to at least experience once what we experienced six times. And I go back here from Harold Carmichael, the days when I was a kid and used to go down to Pitt Stadium to watch them play, and they were brutal. Big Daddy Lipscomb, people like that. And when I came to Philadelphia, my boys and I are very big into sports. And, Ray, I My all-time hero is Roberto Clemente, but you have now become an idol of mine because your knowledge, the way you present yourself as far as everything that happens in Philadelphia, you happen. And I said this to you that night. You put a positive pitch on everything, no matter whether it be a negative highlight or that. And the thing that really touched me is when we won the Super Bowl, you had your son there with you, and I saw the tears and the emotions.
Yeah. And well, that Rudy, I got to run, and I appreciate the call. Thanks, that came up last night a little bit, there, didn't it?
Comes up pretty much every night. Yeah. Every night of Tommy and me, there's somebody in the post-show Q&A that will say, you know, that moment after the Super Bowl with you and your son, it brought tears to my eyes, too. And I think it's just an emotion we all shared, Glenn. I mean, what was happening with me and David was happening all over the Delaware Valley. It was just, it took people back, you know, and everybody had that moment.
It was
just,
everybody.
Yeah, right. You know, this was for Grandpa. This is for Dad. This is for Uncle Bill. I mean, the Eagles won for everybody, and we all shared in that. And the fact, here we are all these years later still talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. Maybe we'll get that one again. That'd be nice.
That would be nice.
Let me see. Who am I going to sneak in here? A couple of people got stats. Real quick. I'm going to get Mike real quick. Mike, what are you thinking?
Ray, I'm the caller who's ruining your W-2 by passing around your book. I was at Tommy and Me on Friday for the second time, and the guy who plays Tommy should win a Tony.
He is. Tom Teddy is a tremendous actor. He's been doing the play from day one. I can't imagine doing it without him.
Tremendous. Okay, sports. I am so tired of hearing these athletes talk about MVP. Can I hear somebody say, can we get to the second or third round?
Oh, I don't think Embiid has minimized winning in the playoffs.
No.
I will not question Embiid's desired win.
Right.
I do think he's campaigning a little more for MVP than I would like to see, but whatever. You know, we think he deserves it, so whatever. But yes, I think the big thing is I would like to see them get to the Eastern Conference Finals and maybe the finals. We've waited forever.
I agree.
All right, last caller of this hour, and we're sticking around here. I am going to be doing leading off, John in Manayunk. What do you got, John?
Quick stat for you, plus minus in basketball. I don't think that accounts for the other guys on the court with you.
I agree. I think it is a flawed stat. Plus minus in hockey can be overrated, but when I look at it and Keith Yandel is a minus 42, I go like, yeah.
That's okay. Probably accurate.
Yeah, the year that Mark Howe was a plus 86, it's like, yeah, I get
right,
that.
Right, I buy that.
But yeah, it's same kind of thing as in basketball. It's like you're on a bad team with a bunch of jokers around you. What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that's a good one. It's a good one. And you had something on the Eagles?
Yeah, I was going to talk. We're talking about riding the clouds. You think there's another needing a safety, any chance to get Honey Badger?
Honey Badger.
We talked about that yesterday. Glenn's very high on that. He's being mentioned. He went down and visited with the Saints, you know, and he went to LSU. So there's a connection there. But he's been in touch with the Eagles, and he would be a nice pickup. He's a leader. He's a ball hawk, and he's a guy that could really, really bring some oomph to that secondary.
Absolutely. And by the way, I read the story. He visited with New Orleans because he was down visiting his family
right.
in Louisiana, and the Saints said, hey, come on by. So it's not exactly like, you know, the Saints, I don't know, it just seemed a little less formal than that. So,
no, it definitely sounds like the Eagles are interested.
Yeah.
And I think it then is going to come down to the money. But he's absolutely a player worth investigating.
Absolutely. All right, Moshe Kravitz. There's a whole lot of stats we didn't get to today, but we got to some good ones. Who wins the prize for the most overrated stat in sports?
Oh, we had an early caller, Ray in Rittenhouse. No, I'm just kidding. there was only one stat that you guys really, you know, caught on to and wanted to talk about when it was brought up as an overrated stat that is not representative of performance. And V and Sharon Hill called to say the quarterback rating, QBR.
Yeah.
So V and Sharon Hill wins the Scheib gift card.
It's a really good one. $50 gift card to Scheib Vintage Sports, where there's a story in every stitch. Check out their throwback apparel at their Center City location or scheibsports.com.
I agree with Moshe. I think V's call was the best.
Yeah, she was good. All right, Ray, you are off to a Tommy and Me matinee. Have a great time. I will talk to you during the week.
Yep.
Stick around. We got Leading Off coming up right here next. And if you got a Philly, if you're on with the Phillies call, we'll take you. Coming up next on 94 WIP.